Welcome to Binge-topia. We hope you enjoy your stay.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Binge-topia.
Hello and welcome back.
I'm Julia Hava.
I'm Eliza McLam.
If you want to support us on Patreon, our Patreon is patreon.com/binge-topia, where you can access all our bonus episodes. We just did a drunk fairy tales episode, and I've listened to it like a couple times back because it's genuinely so funny.
It is funny. It's a slapper. The Patreonites love it. And yeah, for only $5, you can unlock, at this point, it's 16 bonus episodes. I keep seeing people tweeting at us or putting on Instagram that they've run through the entire catalog. And I want to let you know that almost, like, because we have, what, like 36 episodes out now? And there's 16 more on Patreon.
More are coming.
More are coming as well. So you should get on it.
Yeah, get on it.
Yeah. And also, if you would like to rep us on your bodies or in your kitchens or on your hot girl walks
to Trader Joe's.
Exactly. We have a merch store, which is propfront.com/benchtopia. We just put out mugs and tote bags for all you cool girls.
Yeah, so you can just be in your kitchen listening to Binge-topia with your godly wife mug.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, if you want to support us, that's where to support us. In other news, it's fall. I just tried a pumpkin spice latte for the first time. I must have had one at some point, but not in a really long time if I have. And I just want to say it slapped a lot harder than I was expecting it to.
I know, doesn't it? Yeah, I texted Julie before coming because I always hit my little starbs before I come over to record. And I was like, oh, do you want anything? And she was like, I might try a PSL moment. Are they good? And I was like,
and they are. That's
how
the
are
thing.
You like a white woman on the earth and you don't have like the flavor of the pumpkin spice latte?
Because my little
ingrained
Jewish IBS stomach has trouble with coffee, but I'm willing to sacrifice it. It's just crazy because when I was in college, shout out to people at Brown. If you went to Brown, the underground, I worked there. I loved it. I loved just like clomping around and like being seen and not doing the work I was supposed to be doing. I would like make shitty lattes. No, they were actually really good lattes, but like I would be making memes behind the counter. Right. But I would literally take my 40 milligram Vyvanse, drink a nitro cold brew coffee,
jail.
And then like drink another cappuccino at the underground and like be fine. And now I'm like, I'm gonna lose my mind.
No,
I mean, like one shot of espresso.
Yeah, no, I was permanently wired in college. I was like taking my little Ritalin, then taking my little Juul Rip, and then going to my class with like a nitro cold brew and vibrating. Like I thought I had like an anxiety problem. And then I was like talking to my therapist and she's like, well, what are you like putting in your body? And I like told her that wretched combination. She was like, if you've removed even one of those things, you'd probably be okay.
The thing is like coffee is only for people who are really down to get things done, because when you have paralyzing anxiety like I do, which is just like my coping mechanism for anxiety is just like freezing and not moving. Like people know about fight or flight, but they don't know about fight, flight, freeze.
Right.
And freeze is like if you're like a deer in the headlights and you just like don't know what to do. And that's me when I get anxious. Like I literally, even if I know it's going to make me feel worse, I'm just like in my bed watching TikToks with the covers on. Just like if I move, I fear that it may get worse. So some people are like, okay, I need to go do a million things and that'll make me feel better, like my boyfriend, which I'm like jealous. Capitalism loves you more than me, even though we both have anxiety. Like I guess that's more like fight, or flight is like I'm just gonna go like fucking avoid all my problems and do a bunch of things, but I'm just like sitting. I don't know what to do.
So you're saying that coffee makes you like, you would just have a bunch of energy in your body that would have nowhere to go.
Exactly.
Yeah, for me at this point, like I have to drink coffee, otherwise I get a splitting migraine.
Yeah.
Like three quarters. Like it's not even, I mean, I do enjoy coffee. I really like the ritual of it. I think it's something that like, it, you know, habits are very important for me, staple of my day, whatever. But also like at this point, it's just like a something to keep up my
addiction.
Yeah.
Coming up Fern, I don't know if you guys follow her on TikTok. She's like obsessed an insane mommy
her
blogger, but sometimes she makes some points. And she just posted today about how coffee is like honestly an addiction, because people get a migraine if they don't drink it.
Yeah.
And they like can't shit without it and they can't do anything. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it is an addict. She also thinks that like nobody should get vaccinated. And she's like, if you wear a mask around my child, fuck you. My child's extremely scared of masks. And it's like, okay, girl. Like she's also like, I free birthed my baby like in my bathroom by myself. And I'm like, okay, well, you got very lucky that nothing bad happened. Like,
yeah. She also like, well, the thing that she really got famous for was was like, yes, I let my child eat sand and dirt and rocks and like put his like big mouth on the public like cart in the grocery store.
It helps build his immune system.
Yeah. But also the thing that is so atrocious to me is that she has all these videos of her child like eating spaghetti on the couch.
Yeah. She lets him eat spaghetti like, off of the couch. Cushions.
Yeah.
Like it's like as if you took a beautiful meal of spaghetti and just no plate, put it on the couch.
Yeah.
And she's like, he likes to eat off the couch. Yeah. She also stays up till like 4 a.m. with her son because he chooses his own bedtime.
Yeah. And like, okay, listen, I get it. Like in a pre-capitalist society, like ideally we would just like, you know, go with our circadian rhythms. The kid sleeps when he wants, we sleep when we want, we get up, whatever. But it's like she has such an insufferable way of communicating like her views to people where it's like, girl, people have jobs. Like,
she's a vegan. Like, vegans always like, some of you vegans are cool. I understand that being a vegan is really good for the environment and everything, but like some of you are annoying about it.
On one of our first episodes, we like said, we didn't even have like a segment about vegans. It was like an off comment or like whatever. We had a tiny comment about vegans and we got like a paragraph commented on our Instagram. I think it's probably still there in one of the posts.
It was like, Julia, you have disparaged vegans multiple times now. I am so proud of you if you're a vegan. I cannot survive without cheese. But also, you're a little delusional if you think that like only eating fruit does not affect people morally, because like the people that have to pick your fruit are like in inhumane conditions, like with no medical care. Like it's not so much more ethical to only eat fruit because everything that we get under capitalism is unethical.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're not on the high horse that you think that you are. I mean, in terms of the climate, I get it, but it's just like,
and I don't even eat meat that much. Like I'm not even that into meat.
Right. And that's the other thing too, is that people like the vegans especially, they have obviously like a PR problem because there's like no positive representation.
They have the same PR lady as Armie Hammer and Azealia Banks. Which apparently they have the same PR person, which is like, imagine
that makes so much sense. No, but what I'm saying is that like part of the reason why people hate vegans so much is because vegans are like, first of all, they come at you like, oh, you're a murderer and you're doing this and you're doing this and you have to switch to being vegan immediately. Anybody in any type of like, when you think about drug addiction, it's all about like harm reduction. Like you're not coming to a person who is severely addicted to something or somebody who is, you know, in comparison, eat meat for their entire life and saying you have to go cold turkey right now. Like,
and it's your fault.
Yeah. The popular science about all of that is like, no, it's like a process, you know, and like we first start by giving you like clean needles or whatever. Like if you are a vegan, which is like kind of an abrasive lifestyle change to make for most people, and your only solution is go vegan immediately right now and not like, hey, like, have you ever thought about doing like a meatless Mondays, or like, have you ever thought about just like decreasing the amount? Like that is a PR strategy for vegans, and I'm giving free PR advice right now for anybody.
Vegans, if you would like for Eliza to become your manager. No, but also, like, Eliza, we talked about in the very first episode of Bingetopia, like, you were talking about how, like, Republicans in the South, like, you can't yell at people and be like, there's something severely wrong with you, like, you're a horrible person. Like, you're not going to convince anyone to join your political side by, like, disparaging them and calling them a horrible person and, like, just saying, like, oh my God, you just are morally wrong. Like, even if you don't agree with their actions, which is fair, lots of Republicans are, like, horrible and they do horrible things. But, like, most people who follow the Republican Party in America are just not educated about things. And to tell them, like, the same thing with, like, vaccines, like, people have said, like, stop, like, yelling at people who aren't vaccinated and telling them they're like selfish pieces of shit. Like, just inform them about why vaccines are helpful. Like, there obviously are going to be people who are like trying to make things worse, but a lot of people genuinely just like aren't that educated about things. And if you come at it from a perspective of like, you're a piece of shit and like you're making a horrible ethical decision, like nobody's going to want to listen to you.
Yeah, it's complex. Vegans, just stop yelling at people on the internet.
Just stop yelling at people. And also, your decisions are not so much more ethical. They like love to yell at indigenous people for like eating like whale or whatever, and they'll be like, we literally have been doing this for centuries,
right?
And we use every part of the whale, and like you're eating fruit from the grocery store that was picked by like
a migrant laborer getting paid like $3 an hour.
Literally. Anyway, to our vegan listeners, we love you. Don't be rude to other people. We both don't eat that much meat.
Yeah, I was a vegetarian for like 4 years. So.
Yeah, I already don't eat pork and shellfish because I'm a Jew. And if, I don't know if any of my fellow Jews are like this, but like my dad raised me like half kosher. Like technically, if you're fully kosher, you have to have a separate set of dishes for milk and meat. You can't eat milk and meat together. You can't, like, that's on top of not eating pork and shellfish and stuff. My dad was basically like, we just don't eat pork and shellfish, but like you can eat a cheeseburger. So like I don't do that, but I understand why people who have always been vegan or vegetarian find meat gross, because like I have a aversion to pork and shellfish. Like it grosses me out because I've always been told like you do not eat that.
Right.
So like I understand that. I understand why like lifelong vegetarians think that meat is gross, but like not everybody thinks what you think is gross, and like we're all just trying.
Yeah.
Go yell at Exxon.
Yeah, yell at put that to use somehow.
Put that to use. Anyway, Alice from Coming Up Fern, if you want to be on the podcast, we would honestly love to interview you. You can spew whatever you want. We would just like to have an unhinged segment of the podcast where we just interview like unhinged people.
Wait, that would be amazing. But then if we called it the unhinged segment, that nobody would
But you're
come
allowed
on.
To talk about whatever you want.
Right. Honestly.
You can talk about your free birthing and why you think it's better than everything else. And we're not going to yell at you. Like, you can just say whatever you want, and then we'll talk shit about you afterwards.
Exactly.
Also, today, you guys, we're just doing an entirely mailbox moment episode. We were talking about how when we first started doing Binchtopia, we literally would just like spew shit.
We would
like
absolutely plan spitball. Nothing. I know. Like, we have episodes about like very in depth topics that we did no research on.
Well, and so it's not no research. Like, I wrote a thesis about it. Like, well, you right. were, like, somebody doesn't have
well,
to have
well, the earlier
like,
episodes too were us just talking about like our own personal experiences and our like thoughts about it. Like, we really were just like two spitballing little girlies. And now that we have like an audience, we feel obligated to like do more substantial research.
Yeah.
But the earlier episodes really were a special kind of unhinged. And if you like want to go back and listen to them, I encourage you to do so with a grain of salt.
And we just miss being chatty. I mean, look, I'm not going to say that what we were saying, I still agree with everything I said in the episodes. I will say that I made a minor clerical error in our drunk fairy tales when I said that people didn't drink water because it gave them venereal diseases. It did not give them venereal diseases. It gave them cholera and typhoid right. and things like that. So that's why people were drunk all the time, because beer did not have those diseases in it. Mm-hmm. But I was drunk when I said that.
Right.
Otherwise,
that's excusable.
And like, you guys can fact check us, but like most of the things we say, like, we're not like QAnon, like we do like read articles and like anyway, that's that on that. I finished Squid Game this weekend.
Thoughts?
And I read a really interesting, also skip past this if you don't want Squid Game spoilers.
Yeah,
skip past,
because
like,
I want to spoil
minutes.
Things.
Yeah, I mean, look, I feel similarly about it the way I feel about Titan, in that like it's so violent, and I really liked it. Really liked it, and I thought it was really good. But I, as somebody who gets scared, I watched Game of Thrones. Like, I've seen, like, I watched American Horror Story season one, Murder House. Oh, like, God. I've seen very violent things, and there are just some times that I'm like, what is this furthering the plot with? Like, why do we need this much violence? Like, the only effect that it does is really, like, desensitize you to it. And I felt very, like, this was not so necessary, but I did think it was really well done, and I thought it was really interesting, and like it definitely kept you on your toes the whole time. But like, first of all, the English actors were terrible.
No, horrendous. I watched it for like 5 minutes and I couldn't stand.
No, but not like the English dubbed. Like,
oh, the VIPs,
like, I
really
was like,
bad actors.
And it's funny because I was talking to my friend Mimi, who's Chinese, and she was like, that's literally just what Koreans think Americans are like. Like, we're like, in China, we also think you guys talk like that, which is like true. That makes sense. But it was like, the American dude was like, I picked number 69 to win because I love the number 69, ha ha. And it's like,
I mean, honestly,
that is kind of how Americans talk.
Well, but I saw this one interesting critique about it, which was like, okay, you would think that the people at the very top, the people who bet on this and use this for their entertainment, since they're like big businessmen, would be like way smarter than other people, and would have, because they're so savvy and they've gone to the point where they're so rich they can bet on other people's lives. But at the end of the day, they're like assholes, and they make like little 13-year-old jokes, and that's because like the people at the top are not necessarily like smarter or better than the rest of us. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they're just like entitled men who like can still make weird and gross jokes.
Yeah, I mean, I did read an article about it that was like, you kind of, the characters die off in exactly the order that you'd expect them to, which is true. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know, I liked it, but I wasn't obsessed with the ending. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I wasn't obsessed with the ending either. Like, I got to the last episode and I was like, okay, not really
into it. He abandons his daughter one last time.
Just for kicks. Yeah, just for the fun of it.
Also, why did he dye his hair red?
I don't know, but maybe that's a clue for the second season. I really do, though. Okay, I get what you're saying about the violence, but I do think that, like, in the beginning, when, I mean, you're pretty sure when they say, like, if you're eliminated, it means that you die because of, you know, all the things that we've probably seen about Squid Game on, like, the internet. But that first game, when they just start shooting people, you're just like,
And that game with the tiles was horrifying,
oh
too.
Oh, my God,
where they're suspended in the air and you have a 50-50 chance of whether or not the tile will break or not.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody dies. It's horrifying.
It is pretty horrific. But I don't know. I just, like, I don't know. I think the suspense in it was done so well. Like, I was truly on the edge of my seat with everything. Like, the games were, and it's not like Hunger Games where it's just sort of like unstructured, kill everybody. It's like, you know, the goals were interesting, like the childhood. And, you know, I think the violence was maybe necessary to the extent of like, okay, this is what we're doing with poor people's lives. Like, this is how deeply entrenched in debt every one of these people are, that they are risking their lives for it. But it was interesting because they have, like, the guy who, like, runs all the games was like, oh, this is the only place where these people get to compete fairly because they're, like, fucked over and the rest of the world. Like, okay, people, like, disabled people cannot compete in these games.
And also, like people were cheating the whole time. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think I understand the obsession with it. I thought it was good, but it's not the best show I've ever seen in my life.
It is highly entertaining, though,
It is highly entertaining, and I think it's awesome that, like, foreign stuff is becoming more popular in America, and people are willing to watch things with subtitles. Like, maybe go off the American attention span.
I know. Maybe the horrible... Because, the actors that act in, like, the English dub are really... Like, it's so bad, and it just, like, throws off the entire, like, momentum of the whole thing. So maybe it was, like, a conspiracy to have, like, terrible... American actor voice actors so that people actually watch the fucking
subtitles.
No,
I mean, I don't want to watch anything that's dubbed in the language that it's not in. Like, I would rather just read the subtitles.
Same.
But yeah, I mean, it was cool. It was a good show, but not the show that I'm really into Maid. I think it's so good.
Dude, I started that. Yeah, I'm on. It's hard to watch.
It is, but I think it's really good.
Yeah, no, it's a really well-made show. And one of the Heim girlies scored it. The score is really good. Like,
really?
Yeah, I remember the first like needle drop in the show is a Sharon Van Etten song. And I was like, okay, I'm strapped in.
Yeah, the soundtrack is really good. And like... The acting is really good, and Margaret Qualley is
that the main
girl? And her mom is her real mom.
Oh wow.
Well, who's the, I can't remember her mom's name.
I don't know.
A really famous actress. Uh-huh. And her mom plays the real mom. I mean, I'd be interested to know what you think, because like, her, this isn't a spoiler, but her mom has like undiagnosed bipolar disorder.
Yeah, those,
which is really interesting.
Fucking hit those scenes.
You're like
really
relatable
hard
today.
Yeah, like when you're going over when she oh my god, there's so many like infuriating scenes where she's trying to just like talk to her mom about some like just basic logistic thing that is actually like very pressing. And
yeah,
like, she's like, can you like be in the moment, like can you
watch
respond
my daughter
to this?
Yeah,
can you do this? And her mom's like, oh, we're painting and we're doing all these like creative things. And it's like that the part where she was like, oh yeah, my mom's good with her for short periods of time.
Yeah,
it's like, I mean, it's true, like people who are not like I mean, bipolar people, I can't speak for all bipolar people, but with somebody who lived with somebody who's bipolar and undiagnosed for a very long time, it's like, oh, they're so fun for like such for short periods of time, and they're like good to be around, and they're, oh my god, like life of the party and so whatever. But that kind of shit going unchecked is like severely damaging to other people in relationships and in their life.
Yeah, and like not being able to depend on somebody. And like, I thought it was just so fascinating and shows like how fucked up it is to leave relationships, in the part where like the woman in the shelters, like most women like leave 7 times
before
they actually leave.
Yeah.
And like in her talking about like, well, I'm not being hit, so is it still abuse? And she's like, well, he's like throwing things at you, so yeah, it is abuse. Like, I just think that that's really interesting as well. Just like, so many shows these days are doing a much better job about like being nuanced and like actually being written by like women and like people with experience of what the show is talking about. And I think it's really good. I'm really into it.
Yeah, I like how it's edited too. I mean, like you, like they have some things like with the money and stuff. And when she's in court, like there's a period of time where she's like sitting there looking so frazzled, and the background noise of people talking is just people saying legal, 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 legal.
Yeah,
and then they like ask her a direct question, but like you have no context, like the same as her. And I think it's, I mean, it's such, I mean, I've watched like 2 or 3 episodes, but so far it like is very anxiety provoking in a very true way. It's like, you really are at the bottom of the barrel, and it's not like these things keep happening to her, which keep propelling her further into poverty and debt and into unfortunate circumstance, but it's not like, these are real things that happen. Like it all makes sense. None of it seems like dramatized. It's all like you see why it happens and how it happens. I think it's a really good way to show people like, no, this is what happens when you actually don't have fucking money, when you don't have any money,
like, or any support
or any support or any network. Everything becomes impossible. There's not a way to navigate the world if you have no resources and no people who support you.
Yeah. And it shows you how everything is pushing her to go back to her abusive boyfriend.
Yeah.
Because like every turn that she makes, like people are shutting her down or not giving her resources. And when people are like, well, why don't you just leave him? It's like, well, lots of people don't have like other financial options.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's really good. We've been talking about TV shows for like 20 minutes, but should we get to our episode of Mailbox Moments?
Let's get into it. We just get so many, and so many of them are so good, and we only do like two per episode, so we thought it's only natural that we should have an entire episode dedicated. So the ones that I picked, like some of them go back to even like June or something. So if you've submitted a mailbox moment and haven't heard it, you might be about to hear it.
Okay, do you want to go first?
Sure. Okay, this one is called Save My Friend, in all caps. I know that this is a desperate plea because there's no intro and there's no conclusion.
Wait, what's the title again?
Save My Friend.
Okay.
All caps. My friend is in a super toxic relationship with her boyfriend and she only listens to y'all. Please talk her out of this relationship. We're at a music festival and her boyfriend has been crying and sobbing all weekend because he thinks she'll cheat on him. She's given him no reason to think that, but he still keeps bringing it up. He dated a 14-year-old when he was 17, yet he's the one who, quote, fucked up after she cheated on him. Yesterday, he got too overwhelmed by the thought of her cheating that he took drugs and he made her cry all night. The day before, he drank so much that he completely forgot the previous day. My friend is in a really good place and I don't want him to ruin that. Please help her out.
Queen, break up with him.
Queen, break up with him if you will only listen to us. But also, I picked this one because I think that it's a very common thing to deal with, seeing somebody that you love be in a relationship that is not good for them.
Yep.
And my advice, unfortunately, it's really not great to hear as somebody who cares about somebody else, but if the relationship is not explicitly abusive, you really do just have to let people figure things out on their own.
It's really hard, though.
We all go through the flops and we all see people go through the flops. And sadly, like if you are the person who keeps, you know, telling her things that are going to fall on deaf ears of like, oh, he's a flop, you should break up with him, it's not good, whatever, whatever, she might actually start to like draw away from you more. And I think what she needs is like this, and this is actually like advice that I saw from some like psychiatrist or something, but to just be there and support her through the flop era. And it's just hard to be there and hard to see. I think you will get your vindication one day, though. I think she will come around eventually.
But also, like, if you're the girl who is the friend in this situation, like, you don't have to listen to us. But, like, that is, like, not your responsibility to convince somebody that you're not going to cheat on them every second if you've given them no reason to do that. And, like, yeah, he might not be, like, an absolute piece of shit right now, but, like, you ultimately don't want to be with somebody like that. And like, if he's stressing you out that much, then you should leave, because no relationship should be like bringing you that much distress. Like,
yeah,
relationships should be bringing you joy. And like, yeah, they can be hard sometimes, but like, that person should be bettering your life. And if they're not bettering your life, then like, that's just not your responsibility to like make sure that he doesn't think that you're going to cheat on him when like you've only been trustworthy.
Yeah, it sounds like he's really insecure and he's like dealing with some shit of his own. And if you're in that position where like it doesn't matter who your partner is, you're going to have this like intense paranoia about them leaving you or cheating on you, you're probably not supposed to be in a relationship right now. Like,
yeah,
that's not a healthy dynamic to have if you can't reasonably trust somebody who is, you know, reasonably trustworthy.
But also, like, everybody has wanted to send this email at some point to be like, please save my friend. And like, you really do just like get them into therapy. That's really the only thing you can do, is like have them talk about it with someone who's objective and like realize their own worth. Like, nobody's ever gonna leave that person unless they realize what their own worth is. So
yeah, it's true. So just be there for her and try not to,
but you don't have to be like, oh my god, he's such a king.
No,
like, you can still like tell her what you think.
No.
But like,
yeah,
don't put all your eggs into like one basket of like, well, when she dumps him, it'll be, it's like, well, we don't know that that's gonna happen. So
right,
that is kind of a thing where it's like, if it's bothering you so much, the person that your friend is dating, then you might just have to distance yourself from that friend because you can't control who they date, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I would say make sure that she knows that you're like a safe person to come to, but you're under no obligation to keep like engaging with this mess
and like listening to it. Like,
yeah,
you can say like, I love you so much, but like, I literally cannot listen to you like talk about this flop anymore. So like, if you're in need, like obviously hit me up, but like, I don't want to hear about it.
Like, I'm not going to be here to talk you back into dating him, because I don't think that that's what you should do.
Yeah. Okay. This email is called How to Build a Computer in STEM Bossing Too Close to the Sun. I love the pod, especially the latest episode on STEMstresses. As an electrical engineer, it tickled every part of my little rat brain. Never thought I'd hear about frequency hopping spread spectrum. I can't even pronounce the words in this email. Never thought I'd hear about frequency hopping spread spectrum in an episode, but I was basically in tears when it came up. Wow, I'm glad it touched you in that way.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Anyway, wanted to answer y'all's request on how did Wendy build a computer? Yes, please tell us how she built a computer. I'm guessing because she built it in the 1950s that she connected electromechanical relays, basically a switch controlled by a magnet in a specific pattern. Patterns of relays can perform functions such as addition, subtraction, and data storage. Modern computers use transistors. I have a tattoo of one because I'm hashtag obsessed. Aww. Instead of relays, but the building blocks are the same. Okay, I'm going back to that so we can understand. So switch, I do remember in like physics and stuff, like you connect like circuits to each other.
Yes.
So in when I know everything's about patterns. So I guess when you put it in certain patterns, it can like solve things. Like sure. The circuits.
Sure.
Does that make any sense to you?
It's making sense to me in an abstract way. Not okay. In a way that I could confidently re-explain to someone else, but...
Can somebody explain how computers work in a way for, like, three-year-olds?
Yeah, like, explain it to me like I'm five.
Okay, it switches controlled by magnets. Okay, I understand that things are built up of, like, tiny little building mm-hmm. blocks, but the fact that we got from that to Facebook is very confusing
yes,
to me.
Yes, agreed.
Anyway, but the hardware and software is different. That's another thing. As a woman in STEM, I, like, totally know the difference between hardware and software. Okay, so the rest of the email says, also as a woman in STEM, I am constantly surrounded by men and y'all are my main source of female companionship during the 9 to 5. My company is 90% men. Plus, I live in the Bay Area and the tech bro grinds that regularly makes me want to set a Tesla on fire. So thank you both for keeping me sane and stopping me from committing arson. I do make my male coworkers listen to the pod every time they are in my car, but not sure how much they actually take in. Also crazy that men tend to gravitate towards computers and programming because they don't need empathy or skills to communicate with their Linux servers. Linux? Linux servers. It's literally easier for men to talk to their computers than it is for them to talk to other humans. More on this wild topic in Unlocking the Clubhouse, Women in Computing by Janet Margolis, Her Mind. Love you ladies in the pod so much, Linda, who goes to University of Michigan in electrical and computer engineering.
Slay!
That actually is interesting that they don't need empathy or skills to communicate with a computer.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, all the people, like, whenever you take the Myers-Briggs and you're like, who the fuck are the, like, the ISTJs? They're mm-hmm. always working with computers.
They're always far away from people, like...
Yeah, in a lab.
Dabbling with their little machines.
Well, I love that. And I'm glad that there are more women in STEM. You're a queen. But the fact that, like, you just don't need social skills to work on computers and women are like, hey, anybody want to learn some social skills? Like... That does sound like it sounds very isolating to work in an office with like only men.
Yeah.
In that way.
Yeah, I cannot imagine. Yeah, like only men is one thing. Only men who only know how to talk to the computers is another.
It truly is.
We're like already in a Black Mirror.
Still horrible. Don't understand how computers work, but thank you for trying to explain it to us.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, this one is called College Applications Are Never Original. Hey, how are you? That's good. I'm currently sitting at my desk at 10 a.m. on a Sunday working on my dumb college applications. As you probably know, it is application season for college seniors, and my dumbass decided to apply early decision, which means my application has to be put in months before my, quote, peers. I put peers in quotes because I really do not fuck with the people in my school.
Me in high school.
My peers. Anyways, I was just sitting here writing my essay, which is beyond cringe, by the way, and I just thought, this is not original. I'm not special. My essay does not mean anything to the admissions team. I'm pouring my heart and soul into making my application the best it can be, and literally no one cares, and I bet like 10 other people are also writing their essay about the same thing. How do I make myself stand out? I know you need to be authentically you or whatever and show yourself in your application, and I'm trying to do that. At the end of the day, it's really not my fault if I am not accepted, or at least that's what I'm telling myself. My friend's mom said yesterday that they only look at each application for like a minute or something crazy. It's just not fair. College is so not fair. So many people don't even know if they want to go because of the loans. I hate the system and the way the names of schools mean so much, yet here I am applying to Tufts because I like the name and I guess I like the school. But how are you supposed to choose a school out of the hundreds across the country? Okay, done. That was my college rant. Basically, I hate college, but I will absolutely loathe myself if I do not get into Tufts. Much love, Eleanor. I thought this was interesting because the concept of college application essays are pretty fascinating to me because pretty much everyone I know like mined their life for the most traumatic and like horrible thing that ever happened to them and tried to like piece it together into some essay to beg a school to let them in.
I did not write about a traumatic thing that happened to me. I do think it helps when they give you different prompts. I will say, I do not think colleges are looking for you to talk about the most traumatic thing that's ever happened to you, unless it is like actually insane and it's shaped who you are entirely. Like, otherwise, like, this is not a trauma dumping session. Like, they're not looking for you to have the most insane life out of anybody. They're just looking for you to write an essay that like shows that you care and shows that you have an interest in something specific and like shows how you got to that point of being really interested in it. It is really frustrating that they probably don't look at it for too long, and like, especially if you don't have certain scores, they may just not look at it at all, which is like really frustrating. I also know for lots of state schools, they don't like even read the essays. They like just look at scores. And yeah, it can be like super, super demoralizing. But like, you don't need to like, I don't think you need to come up with something that nobody's ever written before. I think it, and it doesn't have to be like, wow, this girl is so different from like all the other girls in the world. Right. Like, write about what you're interested in and what you want to study. And like, they're looking for people to basically say like, I want to go to Tufts because it has this specific thing that I need to be able to study. And like, Tufts is the right school for me because you have this and because my goal is to do this. Like,
yeah, no, I definitely agree that that's the way to go about it. And I think that they really are looking for specificity, and that's sort of like long-term engagement and that commitment. And again, like if you're looking at specific schools, like Julia said, look into why that school. But I do think that people just generally have this idea and like of needing to differentiate themselves and needing to prove themselves in a way in which they feel like they have to like mine their personal life for that stuff. Like, I just feel that that was at least among people that I went to school with was like a very common thing of like, because one of the things that I think is like canned advice for people writing college application essays is like, show that you've like overcome a struggle or overcome a triumph or something. And then people feel, especially because like financial aid is so limited at college, that I think is for people who really need financial aid, they often have to rely on like mining the most like gripping and horrifying things that have happened to them, like due to their poverty or due to their circumstances, so that they can prove to the school like, oh, I deserve to be in this school. And I deserve like, and I have gone through like significant hardship. And that's why like at a certain point when you are a lower income person, it gets to like Hunger Games of like trauma wars in terms of like, I need this money the most because this is what I've been through. And it's unfortunate that people have to like default to that versus like, oh, these are the things that I'm interested in, and like, this is why I'm good at this and whatever. Even though I do think that like, that is probably generally more what people are looking for. It is like so hard if you have grown up knowing that you can't afford college and feeling as if you have to like justify yourself in that way.
But lots of schools are also need blind, which means that they accept you before they look at how much financial aid you need. I understand why it makes people feel uncomfortable to have to like mine their traumas. I'm just saying like, you don't have to do that. And I'm sure that like, that's such a trope at this point that everybody minds like the worst right. thing that's ever happened to them, or like the most like tiniest unique part of their identity that like, I don't know. I just like, college applications are so stressful. I do not miss that at all. I loved college. I did not love applying to college. It was so fucking stressful. And I did feel like if I don't get into the schools I want to go to, like I'm literally going to kill myself. And that's like not a good way to live.
Yeah.
But like wherever you go to school, like you will end up enjoying it. College is really hard at the beginning, even if you did get into your dream school. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know. It's tough, but like you don't, yeah, your essay is probably not going to be like the most unique thing anybody's ever read unless you grew up in 75 different countries and like had like all these crazy experiences. But like, I think the best thing is like, don't write an essay that looks like it could be sent to 500 schools.
Yeah.
Like write an essay that is specific to that school and maybe talk about when you visited that school or whatever. Like,
yeah,
you don't want to send a generic essay, because even if it's a generic essay about like the craziest trauma that's happened to you, like they're like, okay, and like, why do you want to go to our school then? Mm-hmm. You know? So that's my practical advice for that.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it sucks. And this is the worst part of it all. So
yeah,
I mean, this email was written a little bit ago, so I hope you're a bit relieved, but I think it is still application season.
Yeah,
so if you're
in
there, we stand with you. We did it. You will do it. It'll be okay.
Love you. Okay. Okay, this email is called Nirvana Baby. Hey, Queens, I was going to write you a long email about how much I loved and connected with your recent episode, Mommy's Little Miserable Existence. However, to be completely honest, I simply can no longer be bothered. I now instead feel the need to email you about something else that has nothing to do with that and is entirely unrelated. Your opinions on the Nirvana Baby. I was talking about it with my family yesterday, and they were very much anti-baby, whereas I'm not necessarily pro-baby, but like, I have sympathy for him. I think his parents got paid like $200 at the time, and that was it. Now, the entire world has seen his baby penis. Kind of whack if you ask me. I think I too would feel entitled to some financial compensation if I were the Nirvana baby. But him and his attorney are also claiming the album cover depicts the baby as a sex worker because it's naked and reaching out for the dollar bill in front of it, which low-key feels like a bit of a bad take from the Nirvana baby and his attorney, in my opinion, not gonna lie. But who knows, though? Let the Nirvana baby be heard, I guess. I'm also deeply intrigued about what Courtney Love has to say on this topic, since she's apparently being sued too. I don't care or value what that will be like. I'm just kind of fascinated by her in like an observational way. And I feel like she's been behaving a bit unhinged lately, or maybe just always. So I feel like she'd have some equally unhinged opinion on it. Anyways, I'd love to hear about what you lovely ladies think about this. Hope you're having a splendid day. Thanks for making my little rat brain bigger every week. Love you. Bye.
Okay, so basically, in the 90s, Nirvana released an album with a baby on the cover of it, and the baby is entirely naked.
Was that Nevermind? What album was it?
I think so. Let me see. My high school ex-boyfriend was obsessed with Nirvana, and he got me a sweatshirt with this album cover on it. And mm-hmm. I was like,
thanks for giving me a sweatshirt of your favorite band.
I know. I'm like, I'm not the one who likes Nirvana. Yeah, it's the Nevermind album. Okay, wow. In my memory, the baby is farther away from the camera.
Can I see it?
The baby is quite close to the camera.
Yeah, that's exactly kind of what I remember. I mean, look, I'm just going to say that, like, I don't think the baby is a sex worker. Like, that is a stretch.
I wouldn't say that the baby is being depicted as a sex worker.
Like, I understand why you, as a baby, I understand if you're the baby, you would be kind of pissed about that because, like, why have you not gotten the rights, like, or, like, lots of more money?
And you had no choice on getting your naked baby body plastered upon, like, albums and sweatshirts and so many other things. I mean, honestly, I will say that I think this conversation would be different if it was a girl baby.
Yeah,
I think that people would take it more seriously. I mean, I already go on my like mommy vlogger rampage like every week, and like, yeah, I do actually think it's kind of fucked up that like this image was like distributed.
I also think it's fucked up that they only got like $200 for it and now it's all over everything. But like, in terms of like crimes against humanity, like, I don't think it's like the worst thing that's ever happened. Like, it sucks, but like, nobody knows who you are now. Like,
I know, but
they
don't
see that baby and they're like, that's Dave. Like,
I know. I do think it's definitely a cash grab at this point, but also like, I don't know. I kind of don't think that like media of naked children should be distributed and used for advertising. Speaking of the fucking mommy vloggers, this is a brief intermission, but it is really a severe bone to pick that I need to share with you because it is the most horrendous thing I've ever seen. I'm not going to even share the name of this channel because
Wait, is it that baby dressed in like headdresses and like.
Okay. Yeah. It's this mom that dresses her baby like a little influencer, and that's like a crime, but it's not,
It's not the girl that has like the ruffled bell bottoms.
This one?
Oh, yeah. She makes me very uncomfortable.
Okay. So, yeah. This mom, like, dresses up her baby as a little influencer, which is, like, bad but not, like, horrendous. But she posted this recent video. Oh, my God. I pray to fucking God it's deleted. Okay, it is deleted. Thank God, because it should be. Anyway, like, this account has, like, 20 million followers. One of the most viewed videos on the account on TikTok is just her toddler daughter walking around in a swimsuit. It's like nothing more than that. Like, there's not even a joke. It's just, that's what it is. One of the most viewed videos. You can fucking do the math as a parent and figure out why so many people are watching that video.
So
and what kind of people are watching that video. But there was this one video that she posted that thank God has been taken down, where it's like showing her like 4-year-old daughter pretending to like put in a tampon.
Oh, I saw that.
Showing her like pretending to like shave her pubic region with a razor. Like, it's literally so fucking disgusting. And I like need this woman, like, abolish prisons for everybody except for this woman.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. But anyway.
I mean, that is like the original like baby, like influencer is like being the Nirvana baby, I guess. But like, in terms of things that people are like putting their children out to see, like, that is not really even as bad as some of the other stuff, which doesn't take away from the Nirvana baby. I mean, I think it's also like, you want money because it's your face, which I get.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense to me. But I don't think
he should. I think he's entitled to money.
I think he is entitled to money. But once again, our most common point is just like, please don't put your fucking children on the internet.
Yeah. Please don't sell a picture of your baby's dink for $200.
To Kurt Cobain. Why did they want it on their album?
I don't know. It's like edgy and kind of, subversive.
Yeah. Well, oh, dude, it sickens me though. The moms that like dress their babies up like 16-year-olds, and then people are like, there's something wrong with you if you think this is like sexual. And it's like, I don't think this is sexual, but you're dressing your baby in a way that like people, you know, people are gonna like comment on and like pay attention to, and like it's just weird, like,
yeah.
And also just don't, if you're going to dress your baby however you want, don't show them off to the internet where creeps are going to like interpret it in creepy ways.
Right. Exactly. Like it's never going to be your, or it's never going to be the child's fault for like creepy people looking at them that way. But you as the parent have an understanding of reality. Like, let's stop pretending like you don't.
Eliza and I are actually going to go to the Supreme Court and be like,
I would. Honestly, Julia, like of all the things that make me like so enraged, like this is the hill that I will die on every single fucking time.
Like you should not be able to post your child on Instagram or TikTok more than once a month.
I agree.
Like that should be like a federal mandate.
Unless
you are private.
Yeah.
And like you cannot post your children if you have more than 10,000 followers.
Illegal.
I also believe that.
Yes.
And you should not be able to make any money off any piece of content that has a child in it.
Agree.
And that's that on that.
And that's that. Supreme Court waiting on you.
Waiting on you. Like you guys love babies so much and you want to protect babies, the sanctity of their life. Stop. Make it so people can't post their babies on TikTok.
Stop mommy vloggers now.
And stop giving them the financial incentive to do that. Stop. It's giving my sister's keeper, like having another child to like make money off of them.
No, literally.
You know how in my
is.
Sister's keeper they had another like baby harvest for like her organs? Yeah. Like you're having a baby to like make internet posts about.
No.
And it sucks because I do see cute babies and I'm like, oh, those babies are so cute. But then I feel weird about it because I'm like, I don't want to be consuming content of babies that like the babies didn't consent to like be on the internet.
Horrible, 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 horrible.
Anyway, if you support our bill, if any of you are a lawyer and want to write something up that we can petition the Supreme Court
for, I will go to court.
Mommy vloggers are going to be so mad
any day of the damn week.
Anyway, read the next one.
This one is called Confession, I Think I Am a Godly Wife. Hi, Benches. Love the pod and the most recent episode has got me thinking. I never thought I would be saying this, but the older I get, the more I genuinely enjoy keeping a beautiful home, cooking, and cleaning. I love thinking about being an awesome mom one day, and it even brings me joy to take care of my partner, who is, yes, a man. Although I don't particularly align with the godly part of godly wife identity, I'm extremely Jewish for starters, it genuinely brings me joy to embrace these traditionally feminine tasks. I spent a long time debating with myself on whether or not this is just pick-me behavior, and sometimes I still wonder if it is, but ultimately, I think I just love doing domestic shit, and I'm good at it. I still have a career I'm passionate about, and I 100% support women who don't want to fit into these gender roles. Also, I'm absolutely not subservient in my relationship and definitely consider myself the dominant one. In fact, I don't think my partner cares at all if I cook or clean. But I've been with my partner for 6 years, and he loves and respects me, and it genuinely makes me happy when I can cook him a poppin' dinner. Not to mention that when I am stumped for how to clean or cook something, I love getting in contact with my immigrant grandmas and the other women in my family who have so much wisdom and skill in these areas. They're literally brilliant. Anyway, I can't tell if I'm a futuristic housewife with supreme self-awareness and true agency over the tasks I do, or if I am brainwashed by the patriarchy and actively destroying the accomplishments of second-wave feminism. What are your thoughts? Love, Ida.
Oh my god, you're not destroying second-wave feminism. I hate this idea of like, well, it's choice feminism. This idea that like, you are personally responsible for like destroying women's rights. If you may, literally, it makes sense that you enjoy that. Yeah. I like cooking for my boyfriend sometimes. Although sometimes when I bring him food, even though he cooks for me so much more than I cook for him, I'm like, sexism. Why am I serving you?
No,
but when you love someone, you love to like do nice things for them.
And like, I think domesticity is like, I mean, I love being a little homemaker. I love cooking and I like cleaning and preparing for people to come over, and I love serving people and whatever. The problem is the context in which these things often happen, which is like your like shit husband is at work all day and like never picks up his dirty laundry and and takes advantage of you and expects you to have like, inherently there is nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with enjoying and loving like creating things for people and like serving people and like having a comfortable atmosphere, and like that makes total sense. It's just that like a lot of times this like happens in unfortunate circumstances and women's labor is being taken advantage of, but I think that it is like a true joy that you shouldn't feel like bad about engaging in.
I feel like as long as your boyfriend recognizes that what you're doing is labor, then like that's fine. Like I wouldn't act like this for a man on the first date because then he is going to take advantage of it. But like if you guys have been together for a while and like he doesn't really care if you do it, but he knows it makes you happy and he like values how much work it is, then like that's totally fine. Like there's nothing wrong with wanting to be a domestic queen. Like do whatever makes you happy and like do whatever brings you joy. And it is true, like honestly, people who can clean things really well and cook things and make a home, like the talent, like it's so like you are so talented if you can do that, and I respect you so much, and like there's nothing wrong with wanting to do that as long as you're not like subservient in your relationship and feel like you're missing out on things that like you're not allowed to do. Or like, I think the problem was that women were expected to have that mm-hmm. role. There was no choice. It was like, this is a role you have and you can't complain about it. And also we don't value it and it's not actually real work. Like
right.
if it's a choice that you make that you want to do that, like that's totally fine. And it's, you can be a feminist and also like want to stay at home and make a nice house for you and your partner. Like yeah, and men like, do that too.
Yeah. It's totally natural. It's like a way of human connection. What you're saying about like, oh, if I don't know how to cook or clean something, I'll like ask my family members. Like, yeah, that's a way that people have created community for years and years and years. Like that makes a lot of sense, that it feels like genuinely rewarding and good to you. And I think that's great.
And also it's nice to like watch your, the fruits of your labor, like cook something really difficult or like clean something and watch it sparkle. Like I would just say like, honestly, you don't need to do this, but even having a conversation with your partner about how you're feeling and being like, I feel kind of weird about how much I enjoy this, but like, I really want to do this and I want to continue to do this. I just like want you to know that like it is labor and like for you to like, I don't know, like not that he's going to take advantage of it, but I feel like that's a conversation worth having, that like this is something that like requires a lot of effort, but I really love doing it. And like, it doesn't mean that like I want to be like a prototypical housewife. Yeah, but and like
I think it definitely doesn't come from a pick me, you know, sort of ideology, because the whole thing behind it that you're saying is like, you are questioning why it's important to you and like why you value it. And if you're bad for valuing it, the whole problem is that like the pick me ideology is like, oh, this isn't valuable work. And like, I'm not supposed to be doing it. Like, but there's a difference between you actually feeling like very genuinely fulfilled and like good about it.
Yeah.
Because it is honorable. It is work. And it is very important into like maintaining your home and your family and those connections.
As long as it makes you happy, do whatever you want and make sure that your partner knows how much work it is and that they value you and like appreciate it. That's about it. But honestly, go off godly wife.
Go off godly wife.
The transformed wife would be really proud of you. Although not well, because you're Jewish. So
and because you work a job.
And because you work a job. And because you don't have children yet and you have premarital sex.
Right. So improve there.
Improve
and then,
there.
Then you'll be good.
No, but like what we're saying is the whole problem with the godly wife thing is the idea that all women are destined to be homemakers. Like mm-hmm. that's like saying all women are destined to be lawyers. And if you don't want to do that, there's something wrong with
right.
you. Like just don't force women into a particular path.
Yeah.
That's about it. Yep. Anyway, this email is called I'm a Fraud and a Flagellant, Not Clickbait. Hello, Binchettes. That's cute. I like that one. I think you are both incredible and I would follow you into the depths of hell because your word is my gospel. I was hoping that you could give me some advice. I'm in my final year of high school and upcoming exams, along with a multitude of other factors, have contributed to me becoming incredibly anxious and experiencing panic attacks. I recently had a really bad panic attack just as I was about to go into work and had to skip work because I simply could not cope. I felt an incredible amount of guilt after this, so much so that I forced myself to stay in bed all day and eat very minimally instead of doing anything productive. As punishment. This is not a first time occurrence either, and it's made worse by the fact that my brain convinces me that I'm lying about it. Like, I'll be telling myself that I forced that panic attack to happen because I'm lazy and can't be bothered to work, even though I know this is irrational. My mother wants me to seek therapy, but I'm scared that the therapist will uncover my elaborate plan to fake anxiety to get out of certain situations and that I'm actually perfectly fine. So my question is, how can I convince myself that I do not have to metaphorically whip myself with a nail-studded belt as punishment for my irrational guilt when I skip out of something because of anxiety? Lots of love, a loyal disciple.
Wow, this is
much
a lot
to consider.
Much to consider. Well, let me just say that a very, very common response to, like, my therapist was telling me about this the other day, like, if you are about to have to work through something that is like very deeply embedded and like very like probably traumatic for you, a very common response from like a part of you is to want to shut it down because it's afraid that opening up that topic will be like a Pandora's box.
Yeah.
Like for you, your fear is like, if I start investigating this, I'm going to find out that I'm actually a piece of shit and that like all of my worst fears are true and like everything's going to go downhill from there. So why don't I keep putting the Band-Aid over it and like patching it up while I can, because if I were to dive into it, it would just be too much. That is like, I just want to validate that as being an extremely common fear to have happen. And I want to say that there is absolutely a way with the right treatment and with the right therapist to go into this in a way that is very like sensitive and delicate. And that won't, first of all, like this won't help you at all in the moment, but the conclusion is not going to be that you are a terrible person who is like faking all of this, because it sounds genuinely like very debilitating. And like as humans, we're meant to just to do things that make us survive in the best way possible. And this would not be an automatic response from your body. So I totally understand that fear, but there is a way to go into this delicately and be able to kind of like parcel it out and figure it out without opening this like Pandora's box that you are afraid of opening.
Also, like, you're not faking it. Like, I think women so often feel like that, like, oh, I'm just faking it. Like, the amount of times I've convinced myself that I just made up my mental illness, and then like the next time I have a panic attack, I'm like, oh, I did not make it up. Like, you would not be giving yourself a panic attack for fun. Like, they're not fun. You don't need to punish yourself for doing that either. It makes it so, like, it's already terrible enough to have to suffer with so much anxiety and like depression and fear. Like, punishing yourself for that is only going to make you feel worse. You have to think about yourself as like a younger version of yourself or as a friend. Like, you wouldn't like starve and like hurt somebody who is already struggling. Like, no matter what, no matter how hard you think you're going to be on yourself, like, that will absolutely never help. I can promise you that. Any punishment that you give yourself for the way you're feeling is only going to make it worse. Hands down, there's never been a situation in which punishing yourself has made anything better. So you have to stop punishing yourself. And I understand that you're going to want to have that thought, but like, you have to understand that that also comes from a place of like, you probably were not allowed to feel that way when you were younger, and it was very threatening for you to feel that way. And so you try to like punish yourself out of it by being like, you know, maybe when you were younger, you would have like outbursts or whatever, and your parents would be like, go to your room. And so you're essentially trying to do that to yourself to like tamp down on the feelings, because as humans, we don't ever want to feel negative emotions. They're very threatening to us. We don't enjoy feeling that way. And I really have this problem too, and I've been talking a lot with my therapist about it, when it's like the second we have a negative emotion, we want to run away from it, and we'll do whatever it takes to do that, even if it's counterintuitive, like punishing ourselves and making it worse. Like, that is probably the way your feelings were responded to when you were younger. And so the only response you know is like, feeling this is threatening. It's threatening my relationship with my parents and the people that I love if I feel this way. So I have to just punish myself so that I don't feel that way anymore. And it doesn't work. It didn't work when you were younger, and it doesn't work now. And you really do have to go to therapy to like work on that. But I can promise you for a fact, you're not faking your anxiety. I used to feel that way all the time too, that like I was just lazy when I was paralyzed by anxiety. And it's like, no, I actually like also calling myself lazy is like not going to make me get up. Like, if you're on the ground, like imagine you're on the ground, someone kicked you to the ground, and then they're just like, fucking lazy piece of shit, you loot, like, you're not gonna get up. Like, nobody wants to get up when they're being like beaten down by that, especially by yourself. So you're not faking it. Just go to therapy, queen. Find a psychotherapist. You'll be able to work through it. It gets better.
Agree. No, I get that too. It's like, if you, nobody who actually has the problem like thinks that they're faking it. Like, I have this like consistent thought all the time that I'm a narcissist, but it's like, narcissists don't worry about thought. Being a narcissist.
You also like can't fake a panic attack.
Like, you really,
you can instigate a panic attack, but then that means you're actually having a panic attack. Like, a panic attack is a physical thing. Like, you're hyperventilating. So jot that down.
And I think some people are inclined to think that they're like making it up, because panic attacks themselves like are very dramatic, but it's like, nobody puts themselves through that on purpose. Okay, this email is titled Suffering Lesbianly. Hi ladies, firstly, love you and the pod so much, heart emoji. Secondly, I recently entered into my first real relationship. I'm 18 and the lesbian dating pool in my small town is not a sleigh. With a girl who I really like, but the second we made things, quote, official, I felt a bit stifled and almost began dreading seeing her, question mark. Every time we hang out, I have a wonderful time and I'm reminded of how much I like her, but I feel like I'm dragging myself to see her. The other day, I was walking to the place we agreed to meet up and feel like I was being dragged out by the tide. That's how much I wanted to turn around. Anyway, I was listening to Irish Exit and was disturbed by how much
Eliza's like, oh, just my written inner narrator.
Literally. I was disturbed by how much it resonated. Ladies, especially Eliza, do you have any advice on dealing with avoidant, dismissive attachment styles? Please help in agony. Thank you for everything / anything. XXXXXXXX.
An Eliza today. I mean, this is really difficult because I feel like, especially when you're younger and you're first starting to date people, it's really difficult to like untangle what is actual disgust and what is like attachment issues. Like, it's really hard to figure out, like, do I not like this person because I actually don't like them, or because I have like major intimacy issues and they like trigger that because they're actually nice to me?
Yeah,
it's really hard.
And a lot of times I think it's just not that simple. Like, honestly, very candidly, I can say I experienced that like dread, like weird dread. I know exactly what you're talking about, of like going to hang out with somebody knowing that you were going to have an amazing time, and that you like love them very much, but it really is. Sometimes you meet, and I think when this happens with somebody who, because you express that you really liked being around her and you were like very happy to be in a relationship, you have a good time when you're with her. Sometimes you meet people who just, and trigger feels like a very strong word, but who light up parts of your brain that force you to pick up the mirror and look inside.
A grappling today.
And so part of the negative association is like, this is forcing me to look at myself and make me feel things that I am now projecting onto this other person.
So
and I
true.
Don't like that. And that is very uncomfortable to me.
Not speaking from personal experience or
Not
anything.
Not speaking from personal experience. No, but literally, I mean, I still struggle with it. Like in my relationship, literally right now, I like have to deal with the fact that like most, like 99% of the things that upset me about my relationship have nothing to do with my partner. And it's just my little neurons firing away at every turn. And that feels uncomfortable to deal with. Like part of the negative association is knowing that like this relationship is work for you because you are being forced to confront your shit every single time. So that's the dread. That's the dread going into it. It's like, fuck, I don't want to pick up this damn mirror one more time.
Yeah, it is something that like, look, if you're getting into a new relationship, there's no better time than to double down on therapy. Seriously, right. It like being in a relationship is wonderful. It, like obviously a healthy relationship. Being in a healthy relationship is wonderful and so exciting, but like it also will bring up a ton of your issues. And you really need to like work on like understanding what is your problem and what is their problem and what they're actually doing and what you're being triggered by. But I think that's such a good point, Eliza, that like when you are not used to confronting certain things about yourself, like maybe you feel like weird about being a lesbian, like that makes sense. Maybe you have some internalized homophobia and every time you hang out with her, it like upsets you to be like, damn, I really am a lesbian, huh? Like that can just upset you in that way. And then that brings things up for you. But like, I will say the number one predictor of like what your relationship actually is with them and how you actually feel about them is how it feels when you're with them.
Yeah.
Because I dated a lot of men that like when I hung out with them, I was like, this man isn't shit. And then I would go home and be like, my prince, like I would romanticize him. And it's like when you're actually hanging out with them, like how do you feel? That's how you actually feel about them, because you can dread going there because you're like, also I think Eliza would relate to this, like it is threatening when you have a dismissive, avoidant attachment style to feel things. It is very threatening to feel emotions for people because you're like, okay, cool, so like they're gonna abandon me, so I need to make a plan to abandon them first. And like, so every time you hang out with her and you feel things, you're like, ooh, okay, time for my brain to go into over, like it's literally triggering for you to feel positive emotions towards somebody.
Because especially if you are dismissive or avoidant, you have a part of your brain that is constantly collecting evidence of why you should leave them. No matter how much you love somebody, if you have an unhealed avoidant attachment style, there's a part of your brain that is doing that. And so it's very stressful. That's part of the dread too, is knowing that you're going to go there and be critical of this person that you love so much and that you love hanging out with, because there's a part of you that is trying to form this defense mechanism already. Radical honesty. Hello, dating a traumatized person. Here it is. And that I love my boyfriend so much and I have no intention. Like it's that discomfort. That's why it's so uncomfortable. Like in a relationship that is objectively shitty, somebody is treating you bad, you know that it's not good for you, and you're feeling the active pain in that moment. You don't have to reflect on yourself because it's like a problem in the dynamic. It is an existing problem that you can point to things and be like, here's what it is. In a healthy relationship, it's uncomfortable because there's no problem, but it's just you. You're the problem. And you're not the problem. You're fine. You're like beautiful and lovely and you're working through some shit, but it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to have to pick up that mirror and look in it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that like also you have to recognize that like that's just a part of your brain that's trying to protect you by like creating a running list of like things that are wrong with it, because it's trying to prepare you to get out of any situation where you could get hurt. But like you can just let your brain do that and not listen to it.
Yeah. And just know that it really is about you.
Yeah.
And it's about that part of yourself that's trying to stop you from getting blindsided because it wants to be the one to blindside. Feel it, girly. Keep streaming Irish Exit. Thanks, queen. Okay. This one is called 24/7 News Cycle. I recently started listening to y'all after one of your memes popped up on my Instagram Explore page. Love you. I bet you've touched on this topic in other episodes, but I wonder if you would be interested in talking more about the constant deluge of tragedy our rat brains are exposed to. With the pandemic, violence against minority populations, and climate change on our minds 24/7, what's up with the culture of everything being, quote, breaking news? In my high school's cafeteria, they used to have a TV which showed the menu and a, quote, sports news banner scrolling across the bottom. Every story was horrible, i.e., athlete injured, athlete commits crime, athlete was victim victim of crime, and I couldn't believe that that was something my school would allow 14-year-olds to read unfiltered. In a similar fashion to the Czarpocalypse episode, how did we get to this point of media negativity? What should I do about it? In the case of my high school, I actually got them to take that off the TV screens after 2 emails to the administration with parasocial love, Violet.
I mean, I think you just, like, people write the news in a way. It's interesting. I was listening to the You're Wrong About episode about the Newsboy strike. Have you heard that? And yeah. It's like they basically had to like make it sound like the stories were way more interesting and like darker than they were so that people would buy newspapers. Like, that's always how it's been. News is always going to be sensationalistic. Like, just try not to read the news too much, because if you watch the news all day, all you will see are horrible things that are happening in the world. I think the news is very similar to social media in that it provides a skewed perspective on what the world is actually like. Instead of the world being perfect and like everybody's happy, like everything is horrible and everything is dangerous. Like, especially during COVID, I was just watching the news. Like, when COVID was really bad, I was watching the news so much and it just like made me go insane. So
yeah, and definitely, I mean, I think the 24-hour news cycle is new. I mean, back in the day, like, news stories would go on for weeks and weeks and weeks, and now
there was like 1 5 o'clock check-in where they'd be like, this is everything that happened today.
Yeah, and even now, like, even huge news stories like the Gabby Petito case, like that in a matter of a week has gone down tremendously in the amount that people are talking about it and like looking into it and stuff. Yeah, even though it's like an ongoing thing. And that is just very overwhelming, especially as like human beings whose brains are wired to filter out positive information and focus on the negative information, because that's how we survive. Being in a constant state of just absorbing all of the horrific things that are going on in the world is very hard. And it definitely is hard to keep a balance of like, how do I stay informed and not totally like check out, especially as like a privileged person who, like, I'm not in a war-torn country. I'm not dealing with like personal and incredibly hard poverty, and also like as a human being, like, just the influx of everything is just going to naturally overwhelm anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that like it makes it better for people in other countries who are suffering tragedies for you to be watching the news 24/7. Like, that doesn't do anything for them. I think it's important to stay informed. I think it's important to know what's going on in the world and do what you can to help other people, but like, you traumatizing yourself by watching the news all the time is not helping anybody, and our brains are literally not designed to comprehend so much tragedy. Yeah. At once. Like, literally, we're just not. The same thing with social media. We cannot comprehend that much information at one time. So like, be easy on your brain. Go read a book about something tragic if you want to like actually know something in on a deeper level. Like, things are nuanced, things are complicated. You're only going to see the worst side of everything on the news. And also, like, sometimes reading things is very different from like watching things, because they have to say things in a tone that is very scary.
True.
And like, they want you to keep watching, and they'll say, coming up, this even more horrible thing. Like, to be an informed citizen, you don't need to know about everything that's happening in the world all the time and like be like, I don't know, flooded with horrible information at all times.
Yeah, I agree, because it could just ultimately cause like a shutdown where you can't even listen to anything, and then you can't even stay updated in the smallest senses of things. Yeah. Because anything makes you nervous. But yeah, it's hard. It's just like hard to live in the world and hard to comprehend all of the horrible things that are happening. It's like, you know, if you think too much about like our pandemic and our climate and our, you know, meddling in foreign governments and all that, like, it's horrible. All of it is.
But also, brains were designed to like focus on picking one flower at a time. Like, our brains were designed to like focus on one task at a time. We were never meant to invent technology. This is something that happened that was a blip in the human, I don't know,
against evolution, our will.
Against our will. Go read a book.
Go read a book.
That's that on that.
Yep.
Okay. This is called Am I the Asshole Traumatized Edition. Hi, Binchies. British Binch over here that would really appreciate your insight. First of all, I just want to apologize in advance because this email is a lot, but I feel like you two can offer an honest and nuanced perspective. TW for abusive relationships. Basically, I was in an extremely abusive relationship with an older guy, 7-year age gap, from the ages of 17 to 20. I am 22 now. I won't go into detail about all the ways he ruined my life during that time, but let's just say he abused me in pretty much every way possible during those 2 years and continued to harass and control my life for around 5 months after. Last summer, I spoke publicly about my abusive relationship, and although my intention was really just to reclaim my life because he was extremely popular and I couldn't show my face anywhere after the way he smeared me after leaving, like, literally, I live in a small city in the UK where everyone knows everyone and everyone adored him. Anyway, he ended up getting canceled. I'm sorry, I hate that term so much. I just don't know how else to describe it. And was dropped by pretty much everyone. Fast forward to last week and we ended up being reintroduced by some terrible twist of fate, aka bumping into each other in said extremely small city and me rolling over like a sad little scared lamb and being nice to him. After this, he reached out to me and I got sucked back in again. He knows exactly how to get me and was doing all the classic I've changed, I'm sorry shit along with stuff he knew would charm me. Anyways, this only lasted for about a week before I realized that the only reason I was involving myself with him is because despite the fact that it's been 2 years and lots of therapy later, I'm still extremely traumatized by this man and my fond response was going into overdrive along with the fact that clearly I still have some kind of trauma bond to him. I told him things had to stop and obviously he went straight back to being manipulative, scary, and just straight up abusive. Out of panic, I told my friends what was going on and here's the thing. One of them had a brief thing with him before I did. She's older, age 26. And although I don't know the details, she said that he was also abusive to her, which I obviously believe. She got so angry at me for even looking his way again and completely went off at me, has got most of our mutual friends to just completely cut me off and call me a cunt for associating with an abuser, and they've told so many people. I feel so ashamed and just horrified and disgusted in myself. I can completely understand why she's upset, but I really didn't mean to hurt her. I endured serious physical, sexual, and psychological abuse from this man for 2 years. I know I should have never allowed myself to get sucked back in, but also I was just terrified, and I feel like my traumatized little rat brain got the better of me. But also I'm angry at the situation because they know how severely this guy fucked me up. He essentially groomed me into an abusive relationship, and so I feel like it makes sense that he has some kind of hold over me. And I feel like by shaming and isolating me, they've made it worse. Like, is that not extremely dangerous? For all they know, by isolating me, they could be handing me over on a plate to him because I feel like I've got nowhere else to go. So anyway, now it's nearly 2 a.m. here and I'm crying my eyes out because I feel like a terrible friend. My trauma is literally just replaying all over again, and my ex is spamming me with messages about how I'm a cold, cruel, heartless leech who no one else will ever love and how I deserve to be alone because I still can't forgive him for literally traumatizing me. It's all very dramatic. On a real note though, basically what I'm asking is, am I the asshole here? I feel like it's more complicated than that and my friend should be a little more understanding, but am I just being self-centered? I should also add that I've been diagnosed with CPTSD due to the shit he did during the relationship, but although healthcare is free in the UK, the only therapy the NHS offered me for this is CBT, which clearly not working, and I can't afford to go private. I'm so sorry for the truly chaotic email, but I'm spiraling and I just feel like your godly wisdom could offer me some more perspective right now. Lots of love from a deeply distressed binge. XOXO.
Okay. First of all, this is so much.
Yeah.
It's so much to go through the relationship and to face that trauma and then to have it all be reactivated in this horrible, horrible, horrible way. Also, here is what I think is going on. Another girl went through a very similar thing that you went through with the same man. She is getting triggered by you re-interacting with him, and she is taking out her own blame that she directs towards herself of, I should have never let myself get into this situation, he was very harmful for me, whatever, which neither of you deserve to have. It is neither of your faults what this man did to you and continues to do to you, but she is directing that back on you. She is in a spiral with herself about, I should have never let this happen to me. And now that she's seeing this sign of you potentially being sucked back into this relationship with him, she is taking that out on you. It's not correct for her to do, but I see why she's doing it because clearly she's very traumatized as well. But you are not being an asshole. I'm sorry that you're facing this like isolation again for the second time in a different way. But I really think that what this girl has done to you is also just, it's just not about you. And it's her own shit coming back in a different way. And I imagine that she is probably suffering tremendously as well.
I mean, this is just so awful. It's not your fault at all. Like we said in the beginning of this episode, in the episode of Maid, they were like, it takes a woman 7 times to leave an abuser before she leaves for good. Like, mm-hmm. You getting sucked back in, we've all gotten sucked back into like shitty relationships. And especially when somebody has that much control over you and has since you were like a literal child. Like, it makes total sense why you would get sucked back into that. And that is not your fault. She should be standing with you and helping you out of that situation and like having solidarity with you instead of like turning everybody against you because like you were equally traumatized by him. You're not going back to him. Like, he's traumatizing you again. And when other people see that happening, they shouldn't be like, we should cut her off, because it's not like you didn't know him and then you're still associating with her abuser. Like, he's your abuser too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just she's associating with an abuser, so we have to cut her off. Like, this is complicated. She was also abused by him. You guys were both abused. You're both victims in this situation. Like, you should never turn against another victim of abuse and like yell at them for like interacting with the person again, when you, especially if you know how much control he has over you. This is just a very like, and I'm not blaming anybody.
Right. It's just clearly she is still dealing with her own shit about it. And I think that like this seems to be a very, very common experience for people who have gotten out of abusive relationships, is grappling, you know, you describe it too, grappling with the blame. Is it my fault for going back? Is it my fault for reconnecting? I guarantee you that she couldn't leave him the first time that she tried. Like Julia was talking about, she has in her own way gone back to him in the same way that she's seeing you do. And that is, I imagine, extremely painful for her to see. And so instead of what, you know, we would all hope would be the greatest solution of her coming with you in solidarity, she's not able to do that right now. She is grappling with her own blame, undoubtedly. And unfortunately, that's being directed back onto you. Like, no, she shouldn't have done that. But also, like, it probably, I hope it makes you feel better to hopefully acknowledge that, like, she's not probably just trying to be vindictive for no reason. She's like dealing with immense pain herself and is directing it very poorly. And that doesn't take away from the fact that it's so fucking painful for you to deal with. And I'm really sorry that you're going through it. I just think that like there's no like making a villain out of her, which you're not doing. You're not doing, but just like having that appreciation, or I don't know, not having that acknowledgement, I think is like a healthier way to look at it.
But also it's very different to turn everybody's friends against somebody. Like, especially when you know that person is traumatized by the same person as you. Like, that's not okay.
No, I agree. Like, it's not okay.
Even if you're traumatized, it's not okay to, like, turn an entire friend group against somebody who also, like, what good friends should do is, like, help you out of that situation and, like, actually have a conversation. And she should have had a conversation with you instead of just, like, reacting and immediately, like, turning against you, which I understand, like, why she did that. But, like, there are other victims in this situation. And it sounds like this guy has been horrible to, like, lots of people. And, like, you should be able to get support, like, from that too. And they should understand that, like, it's not somebody's fault for going back to an abuser. Like, that's literally how abuse is designed, that you can pull them back in at any time. And, like, you shouldn't have to explain yourself to them, but, like, you should know that, like, that is a really common thing that happens with abusive relationships. I would also reach out to domestic abuse hotlines in your area, because I understand that, like, CBT is not going to be helpful, but, like, there are so many domestic abuse, like, shelters and hotlines and, like, centers, and, like, what you're experiencing was domestic abuse, and like you should get the proper help for that. And like I really think talking to somebody about that would help you see that like none of this is your fault. And I mean, it happens so often, like girls get sexually assaulted and like her entire friend group turns against her because they didn't, like, I don't know, it's just it happens all the time. And it's really horrible that women turn against each other in this way when they're the ones who like have the same trauma and should be bonding over it and should be like supporting each other. But like, it's not your fault, you didn't do anything wrong here, and you also got out of the situation with him again, which is something that's like very admirable. And like, you got out of the situation, it was like a 2-week relapse, and then you like got out of it again. So
yeah, it's hard all around. But I really think that you, especially in this situation where, like, I mean, I really can't stress enough like how horrible it is to be re-traumatized in a similar way. Like, it really is just like totally twisting the knife. And I am really proud of you for getting through what you're getting through right now. And I'm really sorry that you don't have the community support that you need.
Yeah.
But you should be really immensely proud of yourself, of what you're able to do even under the circumstances.
We love you very much.
We love you. Okay, this email is titled, "Please Guide Us with Our Scrub Boyfriends." Hey, Benches, I want to say that I'm hooked on the pod. It is truly iconic. However, that is not the reason I'm writing. My BFF and I have similar boyfriend problems at the moment, and we are lost. Both of our boyfriends hate working. Can't relate, Julia.
Could never be my boyfriend.
Hers will no-show regularly and has been fired quite a few times. My boyfriend just landed a cushy job that is a lucky gig considering his experience and high school level of education, but complains about it nonstop and threatens to quit. My bestie and I both have jobs that we enjoy and that pay decently, and we know that we are lucky to find fulfillment in our occupations. Both of our partners are anti-work and would way rather live in a commune and reject our capitalist society. While in theory that sounds amazing and we would way rather live off the grid than work any job, at the end of the day, we live in a society and things cost money. My BFF and I try to walk the line between supporting / validating our mans while also not enabling them to be total scrubs. At the end of the day, we just don't want to end up working nonstop to financially support our boyfriends while they chill at home. We would love to hear your words of wisdom and find out what you would do in a situation like this. Thank you so much for reading all this.
Men would be like, I don't support capitalism, so I'm just not gonna work and make my girlfriend pay for everything. Like, I get that. And it sucks to have jobs that you don't like, but like, then find something else that you want to do. Like, you can't just complain about how like you don't want to have to work and then complain about not having money and make your girlfriend pay for everything. Like,
yeah, I mean, it sounds like at this point you're not, I realize that you're both thinking down the road of like, okay, if we like move into each, if we move in together, if we get married, like, you know, am I going to have to support whatever? And I get like walking the line of like, I mean, it really does fucking suck to work a job that you hate. And like, I fucking understand. Yeah, I feel like at this point, you're not at the point, it doesn't sound like, where you are actually having to financially support him. I feel
like that's a little bit implied, though, that they are getting paid decently well.
Right. But yeah, it sounds like neither of them are like actively jobless. It's just that they're not so enthusiastic and perhaps not putting in the required.
The other dude just got fired because he doesn't show up to work.
Right. Well, okay, here's the thing, though, is what I'm saying is that, like, I think that can be a conversation that you have with him of, like, yeah, hey, if we are going to make this partnership work, like, I'm not a millionaire, I work for my own money, and if we are a partnership, I need you to start pulling your weight. Like, yeah, I don't want to have to pay for everything. I am worried about a future with you in which, like, this becomes a pattern. And, like, I get the commune idea. That would be fantastic. In the meantime, we gotta work. We unfortunately have to keep clocking in.
Yeah, I mean, I get it and it sucks and like you should be supportive, but also be like, let's sit down and think about what you would actually enjoy doing. Like, let's sit down and think about what would bring you fulfillment or what steps you could take to work towards something that would bring you fulfillment. Because like, obviously you're not enjoying doing this, but like, you can't, like if we're going to be together in the future, I need you to like have a job and like, yeah, have ambition and like pursue contribute a career path. And if they don't want to have ambition and they just want to talk about being like Charles Manson on a commune, then like, they can go do that together. Right. Sounds like both of them really want to open a nice little commune together, yeah, to just sit around on. But even at a commune, somebody has to do the work. Yeah. Somebody has to farm the vegetables, right, and like do the, make the food. Like, you don't just get to sit around at a commune.
It reminds and, like, me of that one like day TikTok meme that's like, when I show up to the commune and they tell me they have no need for like a pyramid resin artist or something.
Yeah, like, you can't just like be the commune like joker. Yeah, like, you have to like actually do the jester stuff. Yeah, and I get that. I mean, it, yeah, absolutely sucks to be doing something that you're not happy about, but like, find something.
Yeah, king. Like we live in a society.
Then, like, yeah, maybe become an influencer about how much you hate capitalism. Yeah, like us.
Pursue something.
No, yeah. I don't know. Like, it's not for real. It's not easy, and it's hard. Like, jobs are not like plentiful, and I really get that, especially if he doesn't have like the education that he needs. But then, like, maybe he wants to go and pursue more education, or like maybe he wants to like try something out. Like, you have to find something. He needs to find something that like piques his interest and like is meaningful.
And the way you're describing it is not like, my boyfriend is so like overworked and like despondent from capitalism and like is facing the significant. It sounds like he's just like, I don't want to do this.
Which, like, which is different. Most people don't want to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they might need a little bit of a reality check.
Yeah.
Reality check for the kings. Okay. This is my last one. Was that your last one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This email is called, I legitimately want to cite you in my academic work. Hey, Binches. I just want to say, love the pod. I cannot get enough. I'm currently pursuing my master's in English and women, gender, and sexuality. And literally every time I listen, I wonder, how could I cite this in an academic paper? Honestly, I might be asking my professor soon, because man, y'all make some points. For the longest time now, I've been pondering the question of whether women can ever really be free in a world constructed by the patriarchy, and more specifically in a heterosexual relationship. I am currently in a 4-year hetero relationship with the love of my life, and I can honestly say I'm really happy in every way. He is so kind, caring, empathetic, sweet, and in touch with his feelings. We have a very independent relationship and both share the philosophy that we love each other but put our own needs and goals first, supporting the other along the way. I do feel like we are partners in every way, and I have been told multiple times that I got the only good white boy. But still, I wonder, in the time we have been together, I have noticed that the way we see our relationship is not how others view us. I tend to be more quiet, introvert, while my boyfriend loves to be the center of attention, extrovert, which I have always kind of liked, but the comments people make are something else. We have been together since the first week of freshman year, so lots of our friends met us as a couple, which makes it even more difficult to define myself outside of him. I have been exclusively called Blank's girlfriend, and I have been accused of only knowing certain bands because my boyfriend is the music director for the radio station we were both on the board for. I have even had a few people make comments to my face alluding to the fact that they didn't realize I was a full person without him. I just know people don't see us as equals. My boyfriend and I have both tried to fight it, but I get the feeling that so long as I'm with a man, I will never really be free. Guess it sucks to be hetero, right, ladies? Anyway, your podcast sticks with me, and I think I want to write a more expansive essay on this and would love to cite the pod. Here's to hoping it gets published or at least gets a good grade. Love y'all, Lauren.
Well, first of all, flattered to hear that you're thinking of citing us in your academic work.
This is just not your guys' fault.
It's really not. It's really, and also, like, I don't know. I understand that we do live in a sexist society and, like, many people have those prejudices, but that kind of sounds like a college thing of people being like, oh, you're this person's girlfriend, or like, oh, I didn't even know you were a full person without him. Like, I feel like the more you are able to self-select your friends and the people who you're around, like, I understand, though, like, and I've never experienced this, but I guess it would be different meeting everybody as a couple and then having, especially if he's extroverted, people defaulting to him as like the go-to of both of you. Like, that is very frustrating. But I just can't imagine, like, in a world where you, like, really choose your own friends and people are, like, grown-up adults, that people will speak in the same ways about that.
Yeah, I mean, she says she's getting a master's, so it does seem like she's older than that, but, like, I would honestly just be like, just because I'm introverted doesn't mean I don't have a personality. Like, just like stand up for yourself. And like, honestly, he should stand up for you too. Like, I know you're saying you both fight against it, but I hope that he's saying like, that's a really sexist comment to make, because that kind of is his job here as the person with more privilege in this relationship. Like, if somebody's making a comment that like, oh, I didn't even know you were a real person, like, he should be like, what the hell does that mean?
What,
like,
is that's it? Literally sexist. What does that mean?
Like, and like, even if he's, especially if he's more extroverted, like, he should be standing up for you in that way, and you should be standing up for yourself. But also, like, lots of people are probably jealous. They wish that they had a relationship like you guys have, and like, they're gonna make whatever comments they can to make themselves feel better about the fact that like, you're in a happy relationship and they're not. Nobody will ever understand your relationship the way that you two understand it. And if you're both happy and you feel equal about it and you feel fulfilled in the relationship, then the way other people see that is not really your problem.
It's really not,
but it is extremely frustrating.
Yeah,
and, like,
I
would get pissed by that.
Totally. And I feel like I catch myself too, like, the whole like blanks girlfriend situation. Yeah. I like find myself referring to people that way, like, and curiously only women. And then I'm like, holy shit, like, why am I just knowing of this person? Like, it's people that I'm like my friends' girlfriends who I like know and love and I'm friends with. I will refer to them as like, oh, this person's girlfriend.
Well, sometimes
in conversation,
I don't know who you're talking about, so I need you to include that specifier.
Right. But I feel like I find myself like leaning into that sometimes too. And that's like an interesting thought to
it's also is like easy to sometimes hide behind your boyfriend in social situations, which I understand. And then people can be like, why is she so submissive? And it's like, I'm not. I just like don't know y'all.
I just
like,
don't have shit to say to anyone.
I don't know. I just would like try to make sure you're cultivating your own friendships and like like outside of him and outside of you two as a couple.
But it sounds like you really do. I mean, that's the way that you described your relationship, is like we put our own needs first and then like our partners together. And that sounds great.
Just make sure that you like give people a little attitude when they say things like that, because like if you give them attitude, they won't be referring to you as blank's girlfriend anymore. Like,
they'll be like, that's that bitch with the mouth.
That's that bitch who has too much shit to say to everybody. I mean, you're saying that like you only know certain music because of your boyfriend. Be like, okay, like that's super rude. Maybe he only knows certain music because of me.
Yeah,
like some of you need to start being ruder to people.
Yes.
And I'm not saying like rude, like you're not being like mean, just like when people make comments about you, you are entitled to say something in response to that. Like,
yeah, you don't have to lie down and take it.
Yeah, you can just also be like, and we were talking about this in a couple episodes ago, like, make them feel uncomfortable. Be like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Interesting.
Nobody's ever said that to me before.
Wow, that's so crazy that you said that to me. I've never heard that before. I've never heard that come out of somebody's mouth before. That's a little embarrassing.
Yeah.
For you
make
to have said that.
Make them feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Or just like don't respond. Just like look at them and like wait for, like that's like a trick that I've heard that like when you want somebody to like keep talking and like you just don't say anything in response and they will just keep talking because nobody else is like contributing.
Or just like say some like cryptic shit. Like if somebody hits you with something, just be like, wow, that's really interesting that you would say that.
Much
to consider. And then just let them flounder before your eyes.
Yeah. Maintain, like, and I understand if you don't, it's not like, but it's not rude. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's not rude to like question why somebody is saying something like that.
Yeah.
And your boyfriend should be standing up for you also.
Yeah, because those interactions are just like passive aggression. Like what they're doing is they're like, here's what I'm communicating to you. And I'm not going to like, I'm not going to say it explicitly. This is what I'm communicating. I'm going to trust you to know that and then to like submit to me accordingly. So if you actually force them to like, you know, if you're like, oh, that, what did you mean by that? Or that's interesting. Like if they have to investigate it and you don't just like lie down and take it.
Yeah.
Things start unraveling for them.
And also, like, I saw something today about people were like, we'll never be free in a patriarchal world. And it's like, okay, yeah, but, like, you can still have a good relationship with somebody. Yeah. Like, some people are just rude and sexist. Like, not everybody's like that. Like, if you feel that you have an equal relationship with him, like, when you're together, then, like, you both just need to make a plan to start being rude to people when they make comments like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's that on that. That was our last mailbox moment, you guys. This was a long episode.
Yeah, it was a big one.
We hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you, guys, for writing into the podcast. We love your little mailbox moments.
We love them.
And let us know if you like this episode also.
Yeah, we have to spotlight our godly wives.
Yes, we do.
A spotlight today for our godly wives.
A spotlight today.
Wow. Okay, Ariana Grande.
Okay, bringing in the godly wives. Thank you so much to Tess Williams, Nicole Pearl, Ruth Curry, Kinsey Williamson, Kaylee Pittman, Grace Drudge, Catherine Noble, Summer, Anna Hayslip, Layla Elgasab, and a very special happy anniversary, Annika. Your partner messaged us on Patreon and they have gotten you a Godly Wife subscription for your anniversary.
That's so cute.
Happy anniversary, Annika.
Happy anniversary. Thank you so much to our godly wives.
Thank you.
We love you very much. Once again, if you want to be a godly wife or have access to our bonus episodes, patreon.com/bingetopia. If you want to email us, bingetopia@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us. And email us if you have any other things that you want us to talk about on the pod.
Yeah, please do.
We love you very much.
Love you. Bye.